When you have an MD and a PhD next to your name, and you're also the president of Mayo Clinic Labs, we need to talk to you. And in fact, it was about a month ago I chatted with this man on SiriusXM. He was so thorough and so easy to understand that I actually transcribed the interview just so I could become an expert to my friends by regurgitating everything he said. So let's do it again here on ESPN Radio. Dr. Bill Maurice, thank you for being with us again, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be with you guys. I have to say, in listening to your previous segment, I realize I'm probably missing out by not taking my adult children back to Disneyland. I think last time I was there, there weren't nearly as many. I think it was still Space Mountain that we were looking at. So,
all right. So what's the favorite ride then, if you could pick one that you remember?
I like Space Mountain. It's a small world. That was old school. But it sounds like there's a lot of good ones that are out there now. I need to get back.
I would make the trip south, but maybe not now, and maybe because
not
of this
right
bed.
Now. No, yeah, not right bed. Now.
You might want to wait a little bit. You know that a little bit too well. It has been terrible upon a roller coaster ride over the last 2 months here with the pandemic. What has concerned you the most, Doctor?
Well, really, the most concerning to me right now is seeing the areas of the country that are having spikes in cases now. And of course, the hard part with understanding this, for all of us, and particularly those not in the medical profession, is that every time there starts to be an outbreak, if you will, or a kind of a recrudescence of the cases, it evolves over weeks. So we've been hearing about case numbers going up in states like Florida and Texas and in the Carolinas. Now we're seeing the hospitalizations, and you know, hopefully we'll be able to manage those well. But, you know, unfortunately, we're going to see some deaths from this as well. So I think what's the biggest concern for me right now is we really do need to learn as a country how to manage COVID-19, because we're not going to be able to eradicate it anytime in the near future. So it's how do we live with it? And I think the discussion around sports and collegiate athletics and getting back to campus is really a microcosm of that.
And that obviously is the area that we are talking about today, because you're seeing the dominoes fall, the Ivy League, the Big Ten, Pac-12. Teams are supposed to be getting together for mandatory practices this week at schools, you know, across the country. What are some ways that if they do in fact have to go through with that, they can continue to stay safe and mitigate the transmission of this virus?
That's a great question. I think one point that's really important for people to remember from a testing perspective is that there still are two types of tests that are out there. One that answers the question, do I or does an individual actually have the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19? And the other is the blood test that says, you know, or answers the question, have I been exposed to the virus and mounted an immune response? But what people really need to understand in this dialogue is that on the one hand, for the first type of test, which says, do I have the virus? There's no single test that any doctor can give to an individual that if it comes back negative, you can say, absolutely, you do not have SARS-CoV-2 virus. And likewise, on the blood test, we can say if someone's had an immune response, but we can't say, well, you're completely protected from the virus. And that's important because then it really gets back to risk mitigation and risk tolerance. There's no stamp of safety to say this person's COVID-free or this person's COVID-protected. And so that means as the different programs start to bring student-athletes back to campus, they're going to have policies and protocols in place to help keep the players safe. And it really depends on how far they want to go. The most extreme, and we had conversations with companies and with entities that you can imagine sending, for instance, sailors onto a submarine. It's really important not to have anybody COVID-19 on that very closed environment where there's no social distancing that's possible. So in that kind of setting, the safest thing to do is to actually bring people in, quarantine them, test them multiple times, and then you can establish that they don't have COVID-19 and then put them into a highly protected, highly isolated environment. It's really not practical for, you know, other than for very small groups to do something like that. So they're going to have to put in what we know is effective right now. And that is social distancing, masking, preventing large crowds, right? So even in how they would take students back to train them, to do their physicals. And I think, you know, none of us, we all live in the world that we live in. So certain players are going to come back. Certainly college football, there's a lot of players that come from the South. Florida is a real hotbed, I know, for recruitment. So some of those players are going to be coming from environments where we know there are a lot of people that are dealing with the infection. So they're probably going to might have to treat student-athletes differently based on parts of the country that they're coming back from as well.
Dr. Bill Maurice is the chair of lab medicine and pathology at the Mayo Clinic, joining us here Sunday morning on ESPN Radio. Matt Schick along with Jen Latta. There are a lot of concerns with college football players, and a majority of them, when they test positive, show no symptoms. They are asymptomatic. Are there any studies out there to illustrate whether or not asymptomatic people can spread the virus?
So, we can talk a little bit about the term asymptomatic, because that's a challenging one in and of itself. And I think another thing that causes confusion for people, what makes COVID-19 so difficult to deal with is that people without symptoms can definitely spread the virus. Now, the people who are probably most apt to spread the virus without symptoms actually develop the day before they develop symptoms is probably when they have the most viral load. And therefore are most apt to spread it. And there's lots of good studies. For those that want to follow me on Twitter, Maurice, MD, PhD, I actually tweeted an article out that showed very nicely from China that three asymptomatic individuals that were in closed settings, a restaurant, a bus, and I can't remember the third off the top of my head, but basically showed how they spread it to multiple people. If you don't have symptoms, you can definitely infect other people. The question of asymptomatic, you really only know that after the virus plays out. So if someone has a blood test and they never recall, that says they had the virus and they've responded and they've never recalled feeling sick and they don't test for the virus itself, they probably were asymptomatic individuals. That's more to me, we don't know enough about those people, and it could be they just don't recall having symptoms. A lot of us get minor colds, although right now I think everyone's so sensitized to that. But the bottom line is, Matt, that if you don't have symptoms and you have COVID-19, you can give it to other people.
Whenever someone talks about masking, and we're seeing a lot of campaigns from colleges and programs around the country who now have trotted out either their top athletes, the coaches, saying, wear a mask. If you want college football this fall, if you want the NFL this fall, wear a mask. And yet, always in the comments below those tweets, there are people who are saying that masks are ineffective about helping with the spread of coronavirus. What is the truth about masks and how it plays a role in the spread of the coronavirus?
Well, it's another confusing issue for people, because there's really two scenarios for masking, right? So it is true that if you are, say, a healthcare worker and you're going to be around individuals who don't have any protective, mask on or anything else, that if you're exposed to the virus, the only type of masking that protects you is called an N95, which is a high filtration mask specifically designed for that purpose. But that being said, we know that the virus spreads primarily by droplets, meaning, small droplets of spit that when everyone's talking, they produce. And if you have a mask on, even just a cloth mask, and you have COVID-19, it will prevent you from spreading those types of droplets. So that's why it becomes so important. So we know if two people have a mask on, and they're not the high filtration mask, but they're just the regular cloth mask, one of them has COVID-19, the chance of spreading the virus from one individual to another, even if they're around each other for 10 minutes or more, drops by fivefold, right? Just from that simple step, that's not even taking into account social distancing. But the reality is, for that to work, both people have to have a mask on. So if I have a cloth mask on and I'm talking to someone with COVID who doesn't, it doesn't help me. So I think that's where people really get confused. And that's why the strength of the debate, and I've seen it on my own Twitter feed, the reality is that, when I wear a cloth mask, I wear it to protect you. When you wear a cloth mask, you wear it to protect me. And when I wear a high filtration mask, which are very short supply and also uncomfortable to wear them a long time, that's the type of mask I have to wear to protect myself. If that answers your question, Jen.
Yeah. That's interesting, because when someone is sick, we tell them to stay home from work or we have them wear a mask. We don't tell everyone else around that person to wear a mask. So your answer to why are we asking people to wear a mask who are not sick? Well, sometimes these asymptomatic people, you might have it, and you said you can spread it, and that's why we do it. Dr. Bill Maurice, Chair of Lab Medicine and Pathology at the Mayo Clinic, joining us here on ESPN Radio. Matt Schick, along with Jen Latta. Can you just walk us through briefly the misconceptions about herd immunity when it comes to college football? Hey, the more test positive and are healthy, the better chance we'll have of making it through a season.
Well, I mean, it's so the concept of herd immunity, which may or may not like the term, but it really refers to the fact that the way that most viruses and infections work through a group of people, a country, a city, is that eventually enough people get it and generate an immune response to it that it stops spreading, because there's a good chance that when a person contacts someone, they're going to be immune to the virus. So, you know, it's logical that people say, hey, if enough people catch it and enough people then recover from it, that decreases the pool of people that can catch it and spread it to others. That's really what herd immunity is about. What we have seen, and that's why the blood testing is so important, because the blood test is the one test after a virus has been in a community that will tell us how many people really had it. And then we have to sort of benchmark that, Matt, against how much damage did that virus cause in that community. And now studies are now coming out. So they've done a really nice study in Spain where, you know, shortly after the outbreak in northern Italy, Spain was hit next and, you know, had really devastating consequences, a lot of morbidity, meaning people really sick with the virus, which we don't count as much. We tend to focus just on mortality, which is how many people died. So the hope was, I think, that as we looked at the blood test a few months later in that same area, that a lot of people, we'd be able to say, you know, back to the logic, well, a lot of people that get it don't get that sick. So maybe what happened in Spain was most people got it, and now they have herd immunity, and just a subset of those people got really sick. What that study showed was that the highest area was actually around 10%. It was between 5 and 10% of the people had evidence of having been infected and recovered by the blood test. And that says that herd immunity is not going to be, I mean, it could happen, but it would have really devastating consequences. And same for a team and for a campus. And you guys were, I was listening as I came into work here, you know, it's not just about the student athletes. And, you know, it's fine to say percentages, 95-96% of the students and student athletes will not get severely ill from the disease. Whenever someone quotes that statistics with confidence, they assume they're in that 95%, right? if you said, yeah, 95% of people get sick, and I'm gonna be one that's in the hospital, but I'm all for herd immunity, it's probably not gonna. That's not the combination you're gonna hear. So that's the concern, really, is that herd immunity is just probably not practical. And then especially, you know, those kids, young adults, really, will spread the virus to others. Teachers on campus, you know, there's a number of young people that have, you know, have health conditions. And so, it's theoretical. It could happen. But if that's the path that we go, we're going to be on a really rocky road.
Dr. Bill Maurice, you got one more segment in you. Can we keep you over a break?
Yeah, if you think it's worth it, I'm happy to stay on.
Absolutely. Everything you're saying is well informed. Chair of Lab Medicine and Pathology at the Mayo Clinic. More with Dr. Bill Maurice, and we'll ask him, what does the fall look like and what would a spring season look like? That's next here on ESPN Radio. Joined for our second segment here with Dr. Bill Maurice, Chair of Lab Medicine and Pathology at the Mayo Clinic. Got about, you know, we got 12 questions left here, Doctor, and we got about 5 minutes. So let's try and motor through these and be as concise as we can to try and get all of these answers here. I was talking to an avid college football fan the other day whose response to the conference only and perhaps canceling the season was, okay, so no college football players have died. No college athletes have been hospitalized. So why would we cancel a season that does not appear to endanger the health of college athletes? What would you say to that?
I would say two things. Number one, it's going to be difficult to play out the season fairly because COVID could lead to players being sidelined, large groups of players. And I think the other thing is for those players, it's not just about them, but it's about everyone they come in contact with and everyone that might be around the games that's going to come. So, yes, they might be in a lower risk group, but that doesn't mean that if they get infected, they couldn't spread it to a loved one, even that is in a high risk group.
Doctor, are you familiar with the term fear porn?
I am not, actually.
It's this idea that people kind of get off with the fear mongering and like they enjoy kind of watching the reaction, the ripple effect of kind of dropping a scary statistic or scary information out there and how people react to it. Because I've been hearing people say, look, this is just like the flu, or it's no worse than the flu. If you get it, you get over it very quickly. I may as well get it. What is your reaction to that?
Full disclosure, that's kind of how I felt about COVID when I first heard about it. But the reality is, it is a serious illness that has the potential to overwhelm the healthcare system if enough people get it, meaning that we don't have enough facilities to take care of the severely ill, and even the young can get severely ill. As a medical community, look, we want to improve the quality of life for everybody, and we understand that the thing we're asking of people is difficult in terms of shutting down and letting go of things that make life enjoyable and that are outlets for us. But the reality is that the risk is real. Just go back and look at what happened in Northern Italy as an example when the healthcare system gets overwhelmed.
Dr. Bill Maurice, what advice would you give the conference commissioners, especially those in the Power Five, over the next 2 or 3 weeks as they continue to decide whether or not to go conference only or just cancel the season in the fall altogether?
I would say they have to decide now and plan early. There are a lot of tools that you can use to help monitor the situation and understand if it's going to get out of control and stop. But you have to have plans for that now. That's why I do think it's feasible, but you really have to pay attention. You have to have testing in place. You have to have protocols in place like the professional leagues are doing to manage and de-risk as much as possible. And you're going to have thresholds that they decide beforehand that if this is what we start to see, we might have to pull the plug.
Doctor, what does the fall look like in terms of therapies available to help mitigate the symptoms?
Well, I think one thing everyone should know is that we are in such a dramatic learning curve with this virus. I mean, it's only 160 days ago or so that we even knew what the genetic sequence of the virus was, and look where we are today. I think there's really three lines of treatment that look quite promising. A convalescent plasma, meaning plasma from people who have recovered, drugs like remdesivir that block the virus itself, and then other drugs that have been around for a long time, like steroids, dexamethasone, and potentially hydroxychloroquine. Again, part of the roller coaster is we're trying to figure.
No, sorry, we've got about a minute left, and that's what you heard okay. In your thing. But so let me quickly get to this final question because I want to get this in. We got about 30 seconds left. Do you believe we should have college football this fall? And if not, what does January through April look like if we push it back?
Well, I think by January through April, hopefully we'll have. There are a number of vaccine trials that are underway. I think once there's vaccines that we know can be effective, that will certainly change the game a lot, no pun intended. So in the interim, we do have some therapies that are available that might help. And so if we push it back, I think that eventually we'll get through this. But again, there's just all kinds of downstream consequences of pushing the season back as we know.
Dr. Bill Maurice, Chair of Lab Medicine Pathology at the Mayo Clinic. Doctor, that's great intel. Thanks for sharing some of your Sunday morning with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, appreciate the opportunity. Anytime you want me on, I'll be back.